gets in. Touchdown, Hamilton. So Jeff Matthews has his second major of the season. Looking for two. Corner out. Wide open is Andy Fatous, and he'll boot it into the crowd. Second down, Masoli. Feeling it now. Nice play. Tolliver, and we might have some. Oh, look at Tolliver sprung. Masoli looks Fatous' way again, and it's picked. And it's Ian Wild having an outstanding season. Turnover number five.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
I'm Mike Graham.
Okay, Mike, before we get into that horrible game that we both watched last Wednesday. There's a lot to talk about this week, football-wise, but we got to get some things out of the way first. You owe our fans an apology. Remember a few weeks back, you were a little bit deceptive in your picks. You said you were going to take the Edmonton Eskimos over the Hamilton Tiger-Cats. You did not. You took Hamilton instead. But because of that, we farmed out to our listeners what should be Mike's punishment for lying to everyone, and we came back with that you were going to write a song/poem about how sorry you are. Do you have that poem ready to go?
I'd just like to say to all my critics out there, you know, that want me to write a poem or a song, you guys can all shut up.
That's all you got to say about that?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so I take it then you do not have a sorry song prepared.
No, I'm sorry. I was just joking about the shove it thing. No, I don't. I'm not a poetry writer or a songwriter either, but you can send in some more embarrassing things I can do for you, maybe, and we'll figure it out for next week.
Okay, I can understand that. I really did not want to hear you sing, to be perfectly honest. I don't know. Maybe you do have a wonderful singing voice. I know I don't, so if my punishment was to sing, I would not be happy with that. So yeah, like Mike said, if you're out there and you're still disappointed that Mike has not come through with something, send us some more ways that we can torture this poor fellow. Be as creative as you possibly can, but not too creative because Mike apparently is not creative himself.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
Okay, so we got that out of the way. Now we got to talk about some fantasy football. Last week when we recorded the show, we did not have the results from our week 6 matchup. Unfortunately, we lost that game. Kind of unsurprisingly, the Ticats were on a bye. We have a lot of Ticat players on our roster. So we took on the Blue Bomber Talk podcast, which is hosted by my colleague at Three Down Nation, John Hodge. They took us down 171-109. But then we bounced back in a big way in week 7 when we took on the Eskimo Empire podcast, a show that both you and I have been on. We took them down 148-133. So now we sit at 5-2. And guess what, Mike? We are in first place in a three-way tie with the Edmonton Eskimo Empire podcast and the 2-and-out podcast. But because of our total points, we actually sit atop the standings. We are in first place in the podcast league. I'm very happy about that. I want to keep the ball rolling. Our next game is a rematch from week 1 against the CFL Horsemen. If you'll recall, we absolutely slaughtered them to the tune of 212-127. So if the Ticats, as I said before, we have a lot of Ticat players on our team. So if they can get the ball rolling and get some points scored. And maybe Calgary doesn't because Ryan over at the Horsemen has a ton of Calgary players. And with them playing Saskatchewan this week, I'm a little concerned about our chances because as we saw last week, Calgary can score at will against Saskatchewan because pretty much everyone can score at will against Saskatchewan. They've allowed, I think, 30 points in every game they've played this year. So Calgary's going to put up some points. So we need our Ticat players and the rest of our team to really pick it up and put some points on the board. Let's get us to 6-2 and keep us in first place.
Yeah, it seems that, you know, we lost that game when Hamilton was on a bye. So if Hamilton's playing, we seem to have a pretty good shot at winning. So, but yeah, we talk about the Eskimo Empire podcast. I think we'll both be on that the week that Hamilton and Edmonton play again. So
yeah, that seems to be the rumor. The rumor they want us to have us both on at the same time. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, you on Skype or whatever, and I'll be there.
All right, so at least we can back each other up, and we won't feel like we're being teamed up on. We'll have a partner to go with.
Exactly.
It's a tag team match. Me and you versus Andrew and Uncle Tim.
Which tag team do you want to be though?
Ooh, well, we're the Hart Foundation. Come on.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm the redhead. I'm Jim Neidhart, and you're the littler, lither, scrambly one. You're the hitman.
Mm-hmm.
I think it works perfect.
I like that. Are we gonna wear pink though?
Absolutely. I'm gonna wear sunglasses too.
Yeah, your pink spandex ready?
Oh, it's you know what? I'm gonna go out and buy it this week.
You don't have? I already have mine in the
Oh, you already
closet.
have yours? See, yeah. See,
Yeah.
I gained a little weight since the last time I wore mine, so there's a lot more gut.
Yeah.
I think I should get some ones that are a little more flattering to my
Okay.
ever expanding form.
You got to work on your night hard laugh.
You know what's funny? My dad, when I was a kid, he had like the Neidhart goatee. Like he was able to shave, because my dad's a redhead too, so he was able to like shave it in that, and he could do a perfect Jim Neidhart laugh. And
Nice.
it was kind of incredible when I was younger, because there were two things. Some people thought that maybe he looked like Jim Neidhart, and then other people thought he looked like the Undertaker. But my dad never had really had long hair. He had shorter hair. So when the Undertaker, like years later, cut his hair short, people were like, dude, that not come on. Look at your dad from 10 years ago. Him and the Undertaker looked the exact same.
That'd be kind of scary if I was a young kid and my dad looked like the Undertaker. I was a little bit frightened of him back in the early 90s.
It's funny because all my brother's friends were scared of my dad. When my brother's a little bit younger than I am, they're all scared. They thought my dad was like this mean guy. My dad is the nicest guy you'll ever meet. So it's always funny that they thought he was like this angry dude, on top of the fact that he looked like the Undertaker. I wasn't around it during the time I was going to school in Toronto. So, but I just heard these stories. I just thought it would be kind of funny. He comes out like out of the bedroom with like a billow of smoke, and like the lights are off, scaring the shit out of my brother's friends.
It didn't help that you were walking around with him carrying an urn going,
Oh, that's true. That's true.
yeah.
That really did not help in any way whatsoever. Okay,
Anyways.
let's get this show back on the rails here. Okay, so fantasy's out of the way. Now we have to unfortunately deal with reality, and the reality is that the Hamilton Tiger Cats got absolutely shellacked by the Winnipeg Blue Bombers last Wednesday. I ended up pretty much falling asleep at halftime when it was 34-0. The final ended up being 37-11. I think this might be the shortest game review we've ever done in the history of the show, because we can pretty much sum up the Ticats' performance in one word: sucked. Right, Mike?
Yeah,
They sucked.
they stunk it up pretty good. I just couldn't believe what I was watching in the first half. It was, I figured, Mazzoli threw that pick six, and that was a terrible start. He got the ball rolling for Winnipeg, and I figured after that they'd bounce back, but they just never did. So they played a little bit better in the second half, but it just wasn't enough.
No, it was you can speak more in the second half than I can, because as I said, I didn't really watch it. 34-0 in halftime. There was a 2.5 hour weather delay. The game didn't get started here until almost 11 o'clock. I think it might have been just a little bit after 11 o'clock. Like, if the game would have been close or Hamilton would have been in it, I would have stayed up and watched the whole thing and suffered the next day with very little sleep. But there was just nothing about this game. What was it? Mazzoli's first pass of the game was intercepted and returned for a touchdown.
Yeah, and as soon as that happened, you're like, oh Jesus, it's this Mazzoli, because when he's on, he's on. When he's off, he is terrible.
And it's funny because last week, I think in our game preview, we were talking about could Caleros play? Should he play? Should they ride the hot hand? And you were very prescient in saying that hot hand of Mazzoli can go away rather quickly. And oh boy, did it go away rather quickly. Why don't you give us through some offense stuff here? What did you see? Nothing good, obviously. There was really nothing good to take from this. Anything in particular you want to single out? Mazzoli, obviously, is probably where you're going to start, I would assume.
Yeah, it was just they couldn't get a rhythm going. It seemed like they were always in their own end, near their own end zone. They couldn't really flip the field until like late in the second half. So they were always starting from a bad position. One thing that impressed me was Terrence Oliver. He had a big game, 7 catches for 120 yards. It's good to see him back in the lineup. I know he started last week, but he really made his presence felt. Fantuzz, Owens, and Tasker—they had okay numbers, not great. Especially Tasker was only 3 catches for 36 yards. But just overall, it was a very bad performance by the offense, as was the defense. So yeah, it was just ugly out there.
Turnovers, turnovers, turnovers. What was it? Five on the night that they committed?
Yeah, and that was the story of the last Winnipeg game, right? You can't turn over the ball that much.
No, you cannot. And Mazzoli now looks like he's headed to the bench. We're gonna get talking about that a little later. But it looks like he's headed to the bench, and he will do so, leading the league in interceptions and leading the league. And this is interceptions, obviously, his quarterback stat, but he's leading the league in lost fumbles. And as good as he played, and the Ticats are 3-3, and I know you and I are both said numerous times, and I think we've said this now going weeks and weeks and weeks, if they were 500 when Caleros came back, we were going to be okay with it. But yeah, it was just, a poor performance from the offense, a poor performance from the quarterback. So hopefully this is one of those games where you just kind of, you get it out of your system and you just kind of move on.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. I think that quarterback that has been injured that might be coming back might give them a pretty big lift.
I sure hope so. So defensively, wow, just nothing they did in the first half could stop Winnipeg. It was at will, almost, the Bombers were moving the ball and scoring. And it seems like, I guess they got their act together a little bit in the second half. It was 34-0. At halftime, final score was 37-11, so the defense did something in the second half that stopped Winnipeg from being able to do anything, but by then it was too little too late. I could single out players, but come on, you give up 34 points and a half, no one plays well. It was a complete failure by the entire defensive unit. They couldn't get pressure, they couldn't cover, and I don't know if you noticed this, but the worst aspect to me of this game was they just couldn't tackle. They missed so many tackles in this game that it was embarrassing. It was just like, no matter who got the ball for Winnipeg, it seemed if they weren't wide open or they weren't untouched, then they escaped one or two tackles every time they had the ball. It was, you know, just a terrible game all around, and the less said about this the better. But yeah, the tackling to me was just, oh man, it was frustrating to watch.
Yeah, it was terrible. The only guy that really stands out is Courtney Steven. I thought he had a pretty good game. The team in tackles had a special team tackle and a quarterback sack. So, you know, he continues to impress me. I think he gets better each week. But other than that, you know, Ted Laron had a sack. But I don't know, man. I was questioning if Matt Nichols could have, if that was just a mirage against the Eskimos. But he looked pretty damn sharp. He picked apart the Ticats really, really good in the first half. So I don't know if this is a resurgence for him in his career, but we'll see if in the games going forward if he can continue to put up good numbers against good defenses like Hamilton. And I thought that Hamilton's defense didn't really send that much pressure throughout the game. They were doing a lot of dropping off with defensive tackles and not the usual Steinhauer blitzes as much as usual. So I was kind of questioning that as well.
Yeah, maybe I know we talked about it last week. Maybe it was they wanted to force Winnipeg into trying to make their receivers, who a lot of them had very little CFL experience, try to find holes in zones. But I said last week, like, everything defensively had to like line up. Pressure would have caused mistakes. Inexperienced receivers would cause mistakes. And it just seemed like no matter what they did, it didn't work. It was just a poor performance, and offensive was bad. Defense was bad. Special teams were atrocious. Brandon Banks couldn't get anything going in the return game. The coverage units gave up like so many big returns. Kevin Fogg had a couple of really nice returns. Yeah. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, and I could be, was there a return that was called back on an illegal block that was really late, or am I confusing that with another game?
I think you might be right. I seem to remember that. But every time they kicked the ball to him, it just seemed that he knocked off, you know, 20, 30-yard return every time. So every time he knocked the ball, I was worried that he was going to bring it back. Guy seems to be pretty talented, and the blocking was pretty good in front of him. So, yeah, the special teams were just atrocious, just like the rest of the team.
Yeah, like this team was simply out-coached, out-played, out-hustled, out-water-drank. Like they were just out everything. Like nothing in this game goes in Hamilton's favor. Brett Maher stays perfect on the road as a field goal kicker, so I guess that's a positive takeaway from this. But all in all, this game was just a complete and utter travesty. They did not come to play.
If you want to take a look, compare Maher to Medlock in the punting category, that Maher had a 48.6-yard average. Medlock had a 43.2. Maher was, his longest punt was 57, Medlock's was 50. So, you know, if you want to compare those two guys in the punting category, which we talked about wasn't Medlock's best attribute, Maher had him in this game.
Yeah, and I think for the most part, aside from that one game against BC, I've been very happy with Maher's performance. And as a guy who's probably making $100,000 or more less than Medlock, and don't get me wrong, like we have talked about Justin Medlock and how much we loved him on this show numerous times, but I will take a kicker who's performing just as good, if not a little bit better in some categories, and get the savings to get players at another position. Kickers are kickers. You can find them everywhere. Look at Liram Hirelahu in Winnipeg or in Toronto. Last year he was terrible in Winnipeg. His first year he was great. Then sophomore slump, and now he's in Toronto and he's turned it around big time. So you can find a kicker somewhere, and I think the Ticats have found a fairly decent one so far this season.
I think, you know, he has to be considered one of the best in the league right now just by his numbers, punting numbers, his field goal numbers. So, yeah, I've been pretty impressed with him. And you miss Medlock, but I think that it was probably the best move to make. So good decision on Austin and all the coaches' parts.
So there's one more thing that we have to touch on in this game, and it has been bothering me for a couple of weeks, but kind of came to a head in this one. This is now the fifth straight game where this team has come out at the beginning of the game and been sluggish. Since the first week in Toronto, with tossing that one aside where they looked awesome and ripped it up, mostly in the first half, they've been outscored 91-23 in the first half of these last five games. That cannot continue. This has to stop. The last two games before this Winnipeg one, they caught some breaks. They played Montreal and Edmonton. Edmonton, it seemed, kind of just let up in the second half, or Hamilton did something that they weren't expecting, and they were able to make the epic comeback. And Montreal, frankly, just sucks. Montreal is not a good football team. They are hot and cold. You never know what you're going to get from them week in, week out. They're clearly the worst team in the East Division right now. So in those two games, they were able to take a bad first half and find a way to win. Against BC and now against Winnipeg twice, they were not able to do that. But more often than not, you will lose games if you continue to fail at doing anything until the second half. And this is now five straight games this has happened. This has got to change. Maybe it will change when number four is back behind center. But if it doesn't, I honestly believe that this team going forward is in a lot of trouble. You simply cannot go behind 20, 30 points in the first half and expect to make these epic comebacks and win. It will not work.
They have to get off to better starts, and I think they will with Claros coming back. And, you know, Ken Austin said before the game in his pregame speech, you know, after the 2.5 hour rain delay, he said, no excuses. And they haven't been using any, but they sure got beat pretty bad. So there should be no excuses going forward on these bad starts. It should be, you know, we take the lead early and just hold on to it because, you know, they're not the cardiac kids. They can't keep coming back each week. It's just too hard on their team.
Well, and the hallmark of those Caleros-led teams last year was the fast start. They were up 14, 21, 24, nothing. 20 minutes into the game. I think it was the Winnipeg game. I think they were up 21-0 in the first quarter. Like, they were games were literally over with that team because of how well they had performed in the first half by about the midway through the second quarter. Like, I remember that run they went on when they just hammered everybody. And it got us all thinking, oh my God, the team is going to dominate the league this year. We know how that ended up happening. But if they can get back to that, if when Caleros can get the rust off and this team can start putting together consistently excellent first halves, couple that with how great they play in the second half. Because even in this game, Winnipeg scored 34 in the first half and only 3 in the second. And I know Winnipeg was probably playing things a little bit differently. They're playing a little bit more conservative. But they're still trying to score. Like, it's not like they stopped trying. So for Hamilton to put that, especially defensively, they can put those sort of dominant second halves with a very dominant first half offensively. This team could be scary.
It has all the talent to be scary. It has, you know, the offense could be very potent, and the defense still has a lot of talent. You know, I like the defensive line. I like a lot about the defense. The secondaries, you know, we're going to talk about it. There's a bit of juggling going on, and it seems like that every year happens, but yeah, I believe that this team can be dominant on both sides of the ball and on special teams. So, you know, the talent's there, the coaching's there. We just need everything to come together and work out for us. In the second, you know, when Claris comes back in the last 12 more games, I think we're going to have a pretty darn good record.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. So let's cleanse our palate with this. The last thing is what we always end our game reviews with. It's the Chad Owens jersey watch. So you mentioned him a little bit. Didn't have a really big game against Winnipeg. He only had 4 catches for 45 yards. So his totals for the season so far, 31 catches for 376 yards and 2 touchdowns after 6 games. That projects to 93 catches for 1,128 yards and 6 TDs. So even with a poor game there, he is still on pace to eclipse the 1,000-yard mark, although that number keeps going down as weeks go on. And it will be interesting, as we're going to go into, basically this is going to segue into the next thing we're going to talk about, some Ticats news here, how Owens will play once Zach Caleros is back. Yes, folks, he's back. Zach Collaros on Monday and Tuesday took first-team reps with the starting offense. He's starting against BC. And do you just feel a weight lifted? Like, the guy who would have been MOP last year is back. That is a great thing. There's really nothing else to say. That's a great thing.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, going into BC, it's always a tough place to play, and to have your best player back on the team is a huge boost for the Ticats. So, you know, he's our leader. He's one of the best players in the league, if not the best. So, yeah, I'm pumped to have him back, and I can't wait to see how he performs. It might be a little bit rust. We can't have too high expectations in his first game, but I think he'll play well. I think he'll have great chemistry with Tasker again, and Owens and Fantuz and, you know, Tolliver. I think it's going to be a pretty good start for him, but we can't have too high expectations because he's been out for a while, and yeah, there might be a little bit of rust there, but I couldn't be happier to have him back.
Yeah, it's been about 10 months, I think, give or take, since he was injured against Edmonton. So yeah, I do think there's going to be some rust there, but it will be interesting because they pulled him off the sixth game early to get him those practice reps, to get him back ready to play. We're going to see if that paid off this week and in the next couple weeks. I think we're probably not going to see the full Zach Collaros until maybe Labor Day. So with a game against BC, and then they got Saskatchewan, and then they got to go to Calgary. That's not easy. The Saskatchewan game at home should be a game that they do well in, because Saskatchewan has not looked good so far this season. But BC's looked pretty darn good. Calgary's looked really, really good. Those are going to be two tough tests. So it's kind of nice to have him knock the rust off against two teams that are actually pretty decent. Kind of agree? Or do you think, would you have preferred to see him play maybe not even play this week and wait until Saskatchewan and knock the rust off against a team that he's probably going to perform very well against?
No. Bring him back. He's ready. He's cleared. Everything's good. You know, let him play. BC's a good team. They're better than I thought they would be this year. They're pretty good on offense, pretty good on defense. So I think it's going to be a tough test for Collaros in his first game. But hell, you know, he's got to play those tougher teams eventually. So, you know, throw him into the fire, see what he has, and hopefully he performs really well.
Yeah, I'm expecting big things from him. Not right away, but definitely over the course of the season. I'm expecting him to take his place at the top of the league's hierarchy once again. The other bit of Ticats news that we have this week is they have added another defensive back. You kind of touched on this earlier. Brandon Sermons, formerly of the Ottawa Redblacks, played a few games in Ottawa over the last couple of years, was released back in July. He actually started for them last year in the Grey Cup. I know that there were some Redblacks fans who were pretty high on him, so when he got cut, he was beat out for a job by someone else. This happens. But it still shows the Ticats, and this seems to be sort of the hallmark or just what this Ken Austin team does, is they're always tinkering with the secondary early on in the season. So this is another guy they're bringing in. Dominic Ellis was a guy. They had Jeff Tisdale for a few games. They just always seem to be bringing in guys to see who can fit and who can work, and this just seems to be adding on to that. What do you think about the Sermon signing?
Well, I think the more help, the better for the secondary. I think they've been one of the weak links on the defense. But, you know, bring him in. If he wins a job, then that's good. You know, we had there was a Mitchell White, I think. He signed with Ottawa, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and he could have been a guy that they brought in. I thought he's looked really good for Ottawa, except for last game. He had, a few penalties. But I think he's a really good cover guy. Could have brought him in. That would have been probably a pretty good addition to the defense. But we'll see how Sermons does, see if he's ends up being a starter. And, you know, I'm not very knowledgeable on the player. I don't know how good he is or how bad he is, but I guess he started in the Grey Cup, so he can't be a terrible player. So we'll just have to see what happens with him.
Yeah, and sometimes a change of scenery really helps a guy turn into something. We've seen guys that look decent in teams, and then they get released, they go somewhere else, and they become superstars. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen with Sermons, but you never know. It's just another player bringing in to see what he can do, and no harm in adding guys at this time of the year to tinker with areas you think are weaker.
No, the first quarter of the season in the CFL is like, it's a testing ground. They got to tinker with all kinds of stuff to figure out who the starting lineup is actually going to be. You know, they have the guys that are starters from the very start, but in the weaker areas, they have to do a lot of tinkering. So this is just that. Like every other year, it seems that they bring in guys for the secondary and move people around. So we're going to see if they can find the right guys going forward.
Okay, so that's all for Ticats news this week. Let's move on to some CFL talk. There's quite a few things that happened, especially in Montreal. The first thing is the Alouettes released quarterback Brandon Bridge. Now, Brandon Bridge, as everyone knows, is a Canadian quarterback, went to South Alabama, was drafted, I believe, in the fourth round last year. Everyone had high hopes for this guy that he would be the Canadian quarterback to break through. He did get a start last year in the season finale against Saskatchewan. But everyone was hoping, oh, this was going to be the guy, this was going to be the guy. The Owls have released him. Now, I got to ask you this, and I took some heat on Twitter for this, for kind of wondering this aloud. Would we even be talking about the release of Brandon Bridge if he wasn't Canadian? When you think about it, he's a third-string quarterback, middling prospect. This is not the type of guy that we would be dedicating time on a podcast to if he wasn't Canadian. That's my opinion. Do you feel the same way, or do you think I'm off base?
No, I have to feel this, because it's true. I mean, the third-string quarterback getting released is not big news at any point. So, yeah, this guy's Canadian, and that's why we're talking about it. We all want to see the next starting Canadian quarterback. Every year, it seems, there's a new prospect coming up. Oh, this is going to be the guy. This is going to be the guy. But it never seems to really happen. So, yeah, it sucks that he got released, and I want to see a Canadian quarterback succeed, just as a lot of other CFL fans do. But you're right. If he wasn't Canadian, we wouldn't be talking about it. You know, if we might, you know, if Jeff Matthews was released, we'd be talking about it. But would other fans be talking about it of other teams? You know, I don't think so. So I totally agree. It's only because he's Canadian.
Yeah. Who is the third string quarterback for the BC Lions right now?
I don't know.
Exactly. Exactly. We know who the third string quarterback for our team is because we follow that team very closely. We know the third-string quarterback for who was in Montreal because he was Canadian. I'd be hard-pressed, and I follow this league very closely, to name very many other third-string quarterbacks. Jordan Lynch, I think, is the third-string quarterback at Edmonton. But yeah. I only know that because he plays a lot on special teams. He's like a punt protector on special teams, so he actually gets on the field. Calgary's third-string QB? Not really sure.
Oh, it's Buckley. He's Canadian.
Oh, you're right. It is. It's Andrew Buckley. You're correct. And he is Canadian. Saskatchewan's? They got Durant. They got Gale. I know they had, what's his name, Brian Moniz, and then they sent him packing after he fumbled like twice in two games. Toronto's now is Dan Lefevre, I guess, because he just signed with the Argos. Ottawa's, I guess it was Brock Jensen, but again, he's been on the field playing. I don't know who it is right now with Harris out. So it's one of those things, you don't really know the third-string quarterback. And a lot of people were talking about Brandon Bridge when he was released. I get it. Canadians want to see Canadians succeed, and I understand that, and I'm with them. I don't know if having a Canadian starting quarterback would really do anything for the game, the ratings, the fans, or anything like that. But, yeah, I just don't think we would give two hoots about this guy if he wasn't born in Toronto.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. Like we said, we want to see Canadians succeed at the quarterback position, but it's just hard. It's hard to get ahead of Americans when there's such a deeper pool of Americans coming out of American colleges and all that stuff. There's so many players out there. So it's just tough to I don't think we're going to see a starting Canadian quarterback for a while. You know, we can keep hoping and keep seeing the prospects coming up, thinking that this might be the next guy. But when it comes to it, it's hard to get ahead of these American quarterbacks because they've been playing since they were, you know, since they could walk. They've been in the system, in the American system, for years and years and years, and it's just tough to get ahead of that.
So speaking of Canadians and Americans and the ratio and all that sorts of stuff, the Saskatchewan Roughriders were fined $15,000 for breaking the in-game ratio rules. I don't know about you, but I've never heard of this happening before. So essentially what it was is that with substitutions and stuff, the Riders did not keep the required number of Canadians on the field, which is seven at the right time. I don't know if it was defensively or offensively where they had the mix up. I don't think that has been revealed. But, you know, obviously Rider haters out there have been saying that this happened because Chris Jones is trying to break the rules and he's trying to cheat to win. And then, of course, Jones and Jones defenders and Riders fans are saying, oh, well, they've dealt with a lot of injuries and this thing could sort of get away from you. And he didn't know what was going on and all that sort of stuff. I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. I don't think that this was a deliberate attempt by the Riders to gain any sort of advantage. And I also don't buy the idea that injuries forced Jones to not know what was going on. I'm sorry. He's the general manager and the head coach of this football team. If he doesn't know what's going on, that says a hell of a lot more about what's wrong in Saskatchewan than anything else. He has to know what's going on, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm going to do a 360 on you. I'm going to pull a swerve and I'm not going to pick the bozo that I picked before the show that I told you about. I'm going to pick Chris Jones for breaking this rule. You know, he's been rumored to been doing this in the past. I don't know if there's any truth to that, but you have to know how many Canadians are on the field. It's the Canadian Football League, that's the rule. You have to have seven starters on the field, and he's the GM, he's the head coach, he sells hot dogs, all that stuff. He has to know. No excuses. There's the injuries. Every team has a lot of injuries. You have to have enough Canadians backing him up. So he's going to be my boss of the week this week because he doesn't. I don't know if he did it on purpose, but maybe he did. Maybe he's trying to get away with getting some extra talent on the field, because we know that the Canadian depth for the Riders is lackluster at best. So this guy might be outright trying to cheat. So he's my bozo this week.
Okay, that's fair. We're still going to talk about the guy that you were going to name Bozo. Don't get me
Yes,
wrong. We have
we
a
will.
lot to
We'll
say
talk
about
about him.
that Bozo, but I guess this was an earlier Bozo than expected. See,
Well,
I nope, go on.
he's messing with the sanctity of the rules of the Canadian Football League. I mean, the first word in a league is Canadian, and we have to uphold the racial rules. It's not the North American League, it's the Canadian Football League. So you have to have seven players on the field, and to break those rules is inexcusable to me.
I completely agree with you. That's why I don't buy the idea that this was something that got away from him in the game. And the idea that he has tried this in the past, again, I don't know. I think Chris Jones is a lightning rod for controversy. I think people like to dislike him. I think he's one of those guys, kind of like Ken Austin, where if he's on your side, you're a fan. You're an Eskimos fan last year, you loved Chris Jones. You're a Riders fan this year, you love Chris Jones. But if he's against your team, you're always. He just seems one of those guys that you just look at and think that he's doing something shady or untowards. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But no, absolutely, completely agree. He deserves Bozo of the Week because this was a Bozo thing to do. You can't allow this to happen. He is the head coach of this football team. There's no excuse for him to not know what's going on at all times.
And you got to remember that he came out of the Don Matthews school. So, not saying that Don Matthews ever tinkered with the ratio or anything, but he was a bit of a cowboy, just like Chris Jones is. He's a Southern guy, and he does his own thing. And I don't dislike Chris Jones. I just think that I think it's interesting to have a guy like that in the league, but to not have enough Canadians on the field is not a good thing.
Okay, so the last little bit of news also comes out of Montreal, and it is John Bowman, defensive end extraordinaire, has signed a contract extension with the Alouettes through the 2017 season. Now, this was a guy who last year led the league in sacks with 19 and was benched for two games inexplicably. And the talk is that his benching, and I think it was him and Gerald Brown were both benched by Tom Higgins, is what led to Higgins firing. John Bowman has 106 career sacks, and no one ever talks about him when they talk about the greats, like an all-time great. Is John Bowman the most underrated all-time great player in CFL history?
He's up there. I mean, you're right. You don't hear a lot of talk about him on TSN or with the panel or with the media members. So this guy has been doing it for years and years and years. He's always at the top of the league in the sacks category. So, and he's still doing it. He just signed a contract extension for another year. So, he's having another good year. So I'm really high on him. We don't talk about him too much either, but he's just kind of a under the radar type of guy. He just goes out there, does his thing, does his work, and he just keeps piling up the numbers. So I agree that he is one of the most underrated players ever.
He has 6 seasons of double-digit sacks. He has 4 in 6 games so far this season. Aside from his rookie year in 2006, he's never had fewer than 7 in a year. Like, this guy just produces game in, game out, year in, year out, and he is completely ignored. Maybe he prefers it that way, but this is a guy that I think is going to go to the Hall of Fame, and we never talk about him. He's not the only guy. Like, I think there's plenty of guys in the league that are like this. Marque McDaniel is a guy who just keeps putting up 1,000-yard season and is as dependable as anyone else. I honestly think that Luke Tasker is kind of underrated. I don't think people give him the credit he deserves for how good he is, but Bowman, to me, I think tops the list. Like, 106 career sacks. If a guy had 100 sacks for like in any professional sports, any professional football league, he'd be getting talked about. These are Hall of Fame numbers, and he's quietly put together one of the most impressive careers for a defensive end, maybe in CFL history.
Yeah, hopefully when his career is over, he gets the recognition he deserves, and he'll be talked about a lot more then. But as of right now, yeah, he kind of just goes under the radar and does his thing.
So the opposite end of underrated is overrated. And you already proclaimed your Bozo of the Week. But there is someone that we have to talk about because they decided to take it upon themselves and do what they do and make it about themselves. We are talking, of course, about Henry Burris. Now, I have been called a lot of things in my time, but now I'm apparently the number one Henry Burris hater in all the internets. I have just had it with this guy. Did you hear his rants on TSN during and after the game?
I heard the one during. I didn't see the one the post game.
Okay, so I have pulled the clips from TSN's website. This here, I'm going to play it right now. Here's the first part of Henry Burris and his rant to Matthew Schenetti.
Well, you know, there's these guys at TSN who always want to jump on me every week. And, you know, it seems like me, here I am out here playing hard, trying to help turn around every team in this league. And for people who are out there, I've turned around four teams in this league. And I've done help do it here, too. So all the people talking junk out there, you can take that and shove it. All right? That's all I got to say.
Okay, so Burris clearly took some issue there with what the panel had to say about him and told his haters to shove it. But that wasn't it. He doubled down on his comments after the game when he was interviewed again by Schenetti, and this is what he had to say there.
You know, I got to talk to some guys out there. I got to check y'all's crowd on if y'all really know football or not. Because the way y'all talk, y'all act like y'all really never played before. But I'll talk to you guys later. We're out of here.
Okay, so Henry Burris very clearly thinks highly of himself. I don't think we would be surprised to hear that. But there were a few things in what he said that that really ticked me off. In the first part of that rant, his claim that he has turned around four teams in the league, you can go to 3 Down Nation right now and see my piece on that. Sorry, Hank, you're wrong. You did not turn around four teams in this league. Maybe two. That's about it. But what really got me angry was the comments he made after the game where he questioned the credibility, whether they played the game, whether they knew the game, of the TSN panel. The TSN panel is comprised of two members of the Canadian Football Hall of Fame, one of which, Milt Stegall, it could be argued, is the greatest player to ever play in the Canadian Football League. Another is Matt Dunnigan, who played in this league and sacrificed his body for the fans and for the game. And you have Chris Schultz, who is a guy that played not only in the CFL, but also played in the NFL for the Dallas Cowboys. And then, of course, he wasn't there for this, but Jock Climie is also on the panel, who had a very good career in the CFL as well. If I know Henry Burris is not going to listen to this, but for challenging the panel's history with football and all that, Henry Burris, go f*** yourself. Seriously, go f*** yourself. That was absolutely uncalled for. It was absolutely disgusting. And I think we've seen over the last little while that this guy has become egotistical. Isn't even the right word. He's just so arrogant. It's always about him. It's Henry Burris, Henry Burris, Henry Burris. And I got tired of it last year when he made those comments about Simone Lawrence. I got tired of it last year when he was talking about how he turned around a bunch of teams, or he turned around an expansion team, and Anthony Calvillo and Ricky Ray never did that. And this is a guy that is so concerned about his legacy that he's going about ruining it. So Henry Burris, go f*** yourself.
You know, the persona that he puts on, and, you know, the smiling Hank and all that, I think that that's just what it is, persona. I think we saw a little bit of the real Henry Burris in those interviews. So he obviously pays attention to what people are saying. You know, he said in an interview before the game that he didn't hear the boos from the Ottawa crowd and all this stuff, but he clearly does. He hears all that stuff, and he takes it to heart. You know, he's a professional football player. You're going to get criticized. You know, the TSN guys, when he plays well, they talk about how he played well. If he plays like, then they're going to talk about that too. That's their job. That's what they do. So don't take it to heart so much, you know. The one thing that I kind of, you know, the promo that he cut, getting back to wrestling kind of deal, at halftime, it's kind of interesting. I was expecting him to say, and I'm the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be after it. But, you know, it kind of made me more interested in the game. I was like, okay, well, let's see what this guy can do in the second half after those comments. And he played okay, but yeah, I think that this guy has an ego the size of Texas, and he thinks he's the best, and he's feeling the pressure. He's feeling the pressure from the Ottawa fans. He's feeling the pressure from Trevor Harris, because Trevor Harris came in and played lights out. He should be the starting quarterback if he wasn't injured. So this guy's just worried about his job, and he's taking it out on people that are just doing their jobs at TSN. I never heard anything that was like out of line by the TSN panel. You know, Matt Dunnigan is one of the best quarterbacks I've ever seen in this league. Nolte Stigall, one of the best receivers I've ever seen in this league. Jock Climie had a great career. You know, Chris Schultz as well. And even Rod Smith. You know, he never played in the CFL, but he knows football. He knows what he's talking about. You don't have to play professional football to know professional football. So, you know, he was out of line. And it makes it a little interesting when players speak out like that. But, you know, it was just kind of ridiculous on his part to make it about himself when it should have been about the team winning the game, not about his legacy. So, yeah, he could have been he was original pick for Bozo of the Week. I kind of did a 180, but he could have been easily could have been Bozo of the Week because of those comments and the post-game comments, too. It's just ridiculous.
I'm all for players speaking their minds and being open and honest, and I don't fault him for being honest. I just have a problem with what he said because it's out of line. Like, you are, it's the job of the TSN panel to critique and analyze the game. And I'm sorry, I don't care what Henry Burris has done in this league for 20 years. He played very poorly a week ago when they lost to, what was it? Who did they lose to in Toronto? They lost to Toronto. And Henry Burris did not play well. And it is the job of the panel to discuss the players, especially quarterbacks. Henry Burris did not say a damn thing last year when the TSN panel was slurping him because of the great season he had. He did not say anything when he was voted as the league's most outstanding player. He did not say anything about the panel when they were saying what a great job he did turning a 2-16 team around and getting them to the Grey Cup. He said dick when they were all over him talking about how great he was. Now he comes out and he performs poorly. And that happens. He has done this before where he has performed poorly. His poor performance is the reason that he was let go by the Calgary Stampeders after the 2011 season. His poor performance is why he was let go by the Hamilton Tiger Cats after leading them to a Grey Cup in 2013. And go look up Henry Burris' stats in 2013. They were not great. He has been let go from teams from poor play. He has played poorly, and he played poorly against the Argonauts. And he came out even after this and said, I played in the game, and all the media wants to talk about is this rookie quarterback in Toronto. Well, because that rookie quarterback in Toronto outperformed you. Mm-hmm. And Toronto won the game in a guy's first career start. I don't know if Henry Burris just doesn't understand how the media works or if he's just willfully ignorant, but he comes off as petty. He comes off as arrogant. He comes off as egotistical. He comes off as a me-first player. And there's a reason why teams have let him go. And if this happens in Ottawa, Ottawa fans, you're going to hear the brunt of this as well. You think that this thing was only aimed at the TSN panel? Believe me, Henry Burris heard those boos that you guys gave him a week ago, and he is ticked off about that. He plays with a chip on his shoulder, and sometimes that leads to great performances, and sometimes that leads to outbursts like this. But he seems to only care about his legacy. He can claim that he cares about wins, and that's all he wants. He just wants to win championships and all those sorts of stuff. But as a guy who has shown for 20 years now that he is all about himself, this did not surprise me, but what do you, this is what you expect from a guy like him.
Yeah, I didn't expect, you know, him to have such an outburst on live TV, but yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what's his injuries? Is he out for the year?
He's not out for the year. He thinks that he'll be back in a couple of weeks.
Okay, well, it's going to be interesting to see when he comes back if Hank is going to be the starter when Harris is healthy, because the way that Trevor Harris played, how could you not put him in to be the starter on this Ottawa team? I mean, you look at the numbers of, like, Chris Williams or whatever. They've dropped off tremendously since Harris has been out. So, yeah, it's going to be a tough decision for this coaching staff to see if Hank's going to be the guy or if Trevor Harris is going to be the guy.
So Burris used his injury earlier in the season as a reason. He said, I've been playing for 2 weeks. It's been 2 weeks. I've been back for 2 weeks. He's basically saying that he's rusty. Okay, fine. You're rusty. Whatever. I want to see what kind of see Zach Collaros comes out this Saturday in his first start. It doesn't play up to snuff. Do you think he's going to go on a halftime rant or a post-game rant about how he's rusty? Do you think the following week after people say, man, you know what, Collaros did not play that great a game in his first game back, do you think he's going to come out at halftime during the Saskatchewan game and talk about how the TSN panel disrespected him, and then in the post game talk about how they know nothing about football and that he's only been back for 2 weeks and he might be a little bit rusty after being off for 10 months? No, you're not going to hear that from Zach Collaros, because Zach Collaros is a professional and Zach Collaros is a grown-up. And Henry Burris, despite the fact that he is probably 15 years older than Zach Collaros, could learn a thing or two from Zach Collaros. Henry Burris needs to grow up, and I've said about all I want to say about him. I hope we never have to talk about him on the podcast again, because I'm sick of Henry Burris. I supported him when he was a Hamilton Tiger Cat, but the things that he's done the last few years have really soured me on Hank. He is a great player. He is a Hall of Fame player. He is going to be considered one of the best to ever play this game. But as a person, the things that he's shown in the last few years makes me not like him.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. I don't think we'll talk about him until Ticats play the Red Blacks in October, I believe. So it'll be a long stretch of no Hank talk.
All right, so let's move on off this nastiness and get into some game preview stuff. We got a game this Saturday. Ticats head to BC for a late Saturday matchup with the Lions. I think the Ticats owe the Lions one for that beating they handed them at Tim Hortons Field on Canada Day. Some interesting things before we get into offense, defense, stuff like that. John Jennings is 2-0 versus the Ticats in his career. We obviously had the Canada Day beating, but he was also the starter last year when Hamilton went into BC, and BC handed a 40-13 whooping on the Ticats. The opposite side of the field, Zach Caleros, who will be making his first start of the season, is 3-0 in his career versus the BC Lions. In 2013, when he was with the Argos, they won 38-12 in what was Caleros' first start of his career. Then in 2014, in Hamilton in October, the Ticats won 19-17, and then, of course, there was last August's destruction, where the Ticats won 52-22. So something's got to give in this game, right? Either Jennings is going to suffer a loss to the Ticats for the first time in his career, or Caleros is going to suffer a loss to the Lions for the first time in his career. I don't know how many times we've seen quarterbacks, even though it's the small, so they've only played a total of 5 games against each other's teams. It's still kind of interesting. Someone's going to remain undefeated, and someone's going to go down. We don't really see that too often.
No, and BC Place is always a tough place to go and play and win. Over the years, the Ticats have had a pretty bad record. Just going off the top of my head, I don't remember too many wins at BC Place. It's probably partly the time difference and all that stuff. But yeah, it's going to be a tough game to win. You know, these Lions look pretty good this year, offense, defense, all that stuff. So it's going to be a tough test for Caleros and the offense to go in there and really produce. So I'm really looking forward to this game on Saturday.
Yeah, I think, honestly, I'm going to say it now. I know we're only going into week 8 here, but I think this legitimately could be a Grey Cup preview. I think the Ticats are going to get better as Caleros gets healthier and gets the rust off. And the Lions do look like a team that can compete in the West. They sit a half game back of Calgary right now, and Calgary's only up on them because of that stupid tie. So BC has looked mighty good so far this year. You mentioned the offense. I've got one point to make about the offense, and it goes back to what we have disliked about this team the last 5 games. Score, and score early. They need to score points in the first quarter and the second quarter if they are to have a chance to win this game. I do believe Caleros is going to be a little rusty. You can't not be when you have taken 10 months off and haven't been hit. But if these guys can find a way to put some drives together early, get some points on the board, I'm hoping by halftime this game is still close and that the Ticats have put up, I'm going to say, a minimum of 17 points. I want to see a minimum of 17 points, or at least have this game be close. Like if the Ticats are down, say, 14-10, I'll be okay with that because then both teams are kind of playing even football. But I don't want to see another game where we go into halftime and the score is 28-3. If that's the case, again, this is a late night kickoff here. This will be the second straight game that I don't see the end of.
The fast start is so important for this team. I think maybe give the ball to Gable a bit early and take a little bit of pressure off Caleros, get him into a rhythm, get into a rhythm of the game. And it's all going to be about how Caleros performs, in my opinion. And for God's sakes, protect him. Don't let him get hit that often because we can't afford this guy to go down again. So, yeah, the fast start is absolutely crucial for this team.
Okay, Mike, so what do you got on the defensive side of the football? What are you looking there? What are some of your keys to the Ticats getting the win out in BC?
I think the secondary just has to be better. Winnipeg really exposed them last week. They had the momentum going from the start of the game with that pick six from Mazzoli, and then they kind of picked apart the defense in the secondary. So, you know, they have to perform better. They have to cover better and take away some of the BC Lions weapons with Arsenault and Burnham and all those guys, Sean Gore. It's going to be a tough challenge for them. And I'm just looking at how they perform because they really have to be better than what they've been in the first 6 games of the season.
Yeah, if we recall back to the game against the Lions on Canada Day, they had a stacked front. They ran the ball very well, and Jennings picked his spots. If BC... I don't think they're going to come up with the same game plan. You don't usually see that, but that's something the Ticats have to be prepared for. BC's got a pretty potent offense, and when Jonathan Jennings is on his game, they look nearly unstoppable. So yeah, it would be nice to see that that defensive secondary locked down some of those receivers. And also, I think personally, and this, again, goes back to something we talk about every week, getting some pressure on the quarterback. He's a young guy. He's prone to make mistakes. We saw it in the game against Calgary a couple weeks ago, that thrilling overtime game, throwing a couple bad interceptions late in the game. If you can get in his face, and this is with any quarterback, but especially with young quarterbacks, they're going to make mistakes. We didn't see a lot of pressure against Winnipeg. Maybe we'll see a little bit more against the Lions. But yeah, I think your key to the game there is pretty spot on. That receiving core is deadly in BC, and if they can get open and they can make some plays, it could be a long night for the Ticats.
Yeah, and you know, Jennings just keeps impressing me. I think that this guy, I hesitate to say this, but I think he might be the real deal. He's performed over, you know, a number of games now, and he just keeps getting better. So it's going to be a tough test to stop this guy from completing those passes to those talented receivers.
I'm with you. I was skeptical of this guy going into the season, but not because I didn't think he was talented. Just we've seen talented players come up here, play well in the last half of the season, come back the following season and not do much. But he has shown, again, still making mistakes because he's only made like maybe less than a dozen starts in his career. So he's going to make errors. He's going to make mistakes. That's going to happen. But I see a lot of progression in this guy. And again, Wally just finds a way to get quarterbacks. He's been doing this for 30 years now, it seems. No matter who he's coaching or where he's employed, he just finds a way to find quarterbacks. It's kind of incredible when you look back on all the guys dating back to his time in Calgary in the early 90s, who he has brought into this league and developed into MOPs and Grey Cup champions. And it looks like John Jennings is the next guy in line in that awesome quarterback tree that Buono has sprung out from the ground.
You know, it kind of reminds me of the situation back in BC 10 or more years ago now with Printers and Dickinson. Not just because of the color of the skin, you know, one guy's black, one guy's white, but Jennings is the up-and-comer. He's the up-and-coming superstar. And Lule's the experienced guy that can come in and lead a team if Jennings goes down. So I see a lot of similarities in that situation. I think Jennings has a better future than Printers did. You know, Printers had one really good year and then it kind of dropped off from there. I think Jennings is going to have a long career and a very productive one. So yeah, he's been Buono keeps finding him. You know, you go back to his days in Calgary, Flutie, Dickinson, Garcia, you know, all those guys that he's
trained. Henry Burris.
So, Henry Burris, you know, there's another guy. So yeah, it's good to have him back in the league as a coach and producing another great quarterback.
All right, Mike, it's time to make our picks. So again, like we say every week, you can join our pick 'em group, Oski Wee Wees, and you come in, you win, you finish at the top of the standings at the end of the year. Gonna get a cool Ticats t-shirt and a Ticats toque. So the top three, as we do every week, after week 7. In third place, we have Ramon Cat, who I believe was in the top three last week. They sit with 2,327 points. In second place, drum roll please, it's me. You got the drum roll in. Awesome. It's me. I have sprung up and landed at number 2 with 2,412 points. And in first place still is Richard with 2,544 points, so I am not far behind. Mike, however, rough week for you last week. You fell all the way down to 11th with 1,895 points. A long way from where you were at the start of the season when you were sitting pretty at the top of the standings.
Been quite the decline, but, you know, 1-3 last week. Hopefully I can bounce back this week.
Hey, it all takes one good week. I was like 5th or 6th. 3-1 week, boom, number 2, gunning for that number 1 spot, getting really close. So we'll see how we do this week and where we stand after week 8. So let's get into the picks, Mike. Thursday night, two struggling teams taking on one another. We have Montreal headed to Edmonton to take on the Eskimos. These two teams have, Edmonton especially, was it 3 losses in a row now? Not mm-hmm. looked very good. They're struggling big time with the Grey Cup hangover, it looks like, and the loss of all those players and coaches. And Montreal just is... I don't know what the hell's going on there. So in this battle of two underperforming teams, who do you have?
I got to take Edmonton at home. I just, you know, I said it last week. I don't think they're going to lose 3 in a row, and they did. But 4 in a row, I don't think so. Not at home, not against the Alouettes. They're just too talented of a team. I think the offense is going to perform really well, so I'm going to take the Eskimos in this one.
I am with you there. I think the cure for what ails the Edmonton Eskimos is the Montreal Alouettes. I don't think this one is even close. I think the Edmonton Eskimos figure out how to put it all together and get that monkey off their back, get their first win at Commonwealth of the Year, and end that horrible 3-game losing streak. Friday night, we have the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, the suddenly hot Winnipeg Blue Bombers, heading to Toronto to take on the rested Toronto Argonauts. A couple weeks ago, you would have looked at this game and gone, well, we know where we're going with the picks here, but Winnipeg's rolled off two wins in their last two games and look like a much different team with Matt Nichols behind center. So this is a lot more interesting than it would have been when we initially saw this matchup back when the schedule was released. So who do you got between the Bombers and the Argos?
I'm going to take the Bombers. I think that, you know, the last two games they played against two pretty good teams and beat them pretty good. So, you know, Matt Nichols seems to be running that offense really well. And, you know, their defense is nothing to joke about. I think they have a really good front four, and I think they keep getting better each week. So I'm going to take the Bombers to beat the Argos at home. You know, the Argos haven't really performed that well at BMO Field, their new home stadium. So, yeah, I take the Bombers in a close game. And you got to consider Ricky Ray out and Kilgore's in. I think it's Kilgore, right?
That's yes. Yep, yeah, that's the starter.
So, you know, he played good last week, but we've seen rookie quarterbacks play good in their first start and then drop off. So for all those reasons, I'm going to go with the Bombers.
Oh, so I have Toronto written down here, and then you decided to open your mouth, and I am making a switch. I am also taking Winnipeg. I was all in on Toronto, thinking bye week, at home, Winnipeg's going to cool down. You know what? Yeah, I'm going to go with the Bombers. I think they're going to stay hot. I think the Ray factor, that him not there, is going to play into this. Again, you just mentioned rookie quarterbacks, great first start. We saw Mitchell Gale make we saw Gale make his first career start and play well. We've seen guys make first career starts look really good, especially when they play Ottawa. I think Ottawa's lost to like five guys who have made their first career starts since they've been back in the league. So yeah, everything, I want to take Toronto because I think they're the better team, but right now, I you convinced me. I'm going to go with Winnipeg.
All right, taking the Bombers.
All right, so Saturday night we have a double header. The first part sees the Calgary Stampeders head to Saskatchewan to take on the Rough Riders. Is there really any debate here?
No, I don't think so. You know, with Chris Jones coming into Saskatchewan, all the talk was, oh, the defense is going to be better. But have they been better? I don't think they have. I think they may be worse up to this point. I mean, they're giving up around 35 points a game. It's just, it's looked bad. He's putting in players that don't play the positions. AC Leonard's a tight end, and he's playing defensive end. He's just trying all sorts of things. So I don't think there's any chance that there's a chance, but a very small possibility that the Riders beat Calgary, even though they're at home. I think the Riders drop to 1-6, and Calgary keeps rolling.
Yeah, of course. Calgary's going to win this football game. I do expect it to be a little closer than the one in Calgary was. That was a tight game for the most part, and then the fourth quarter happened, and Calgary just kind of exploded. I think Saskatchewan will do the same. I think they'll keep it close. They'll be at home. Those fans will be pretty jacked up. But I still think there's no way that Calgary doesn't leave Saskatchewan with the victory. I would be shocked. It might be the biggest upset of the season if that was to happen. Calgary just looks like Calgary, and Saskatchewan looks about as bad as it did last year. So, yeah, stamps all the way in this one. Final game of the week, the second part of the Saturday night doubleheader, sees our Hamilton Tiger Cats head to Vancouver to take on the BC Lions. Mike, I agonized over this pick, heart versus head. Maybe you did as well. Who are you taking in this matchup?
I don't know if I'm ever going to take another team if Hamilton's playing them. But, you know, I've got Hamilton. I'm going with the heart. I think Claros is coming back. Hopefully he's the Claros that he was last year, and we steal the win in BC. It's going to be tough. You know, I think it could go either way. You know, the time change and all that stuff. Claros first start back might be a little rusty, but I'm going to go with the Tiger Cats in a close game against BC.
Time change, late night, long trip to the other side of the country, quarterback making his first start. I'm taking the Lions. I just, look, this is about picking.
It's the logical choice.
It is. It's tough. Because if Hamilton wins and I lose this game, I'm not going to be upset. I might kick myself for not taking the Ticats, but I'm not going to be upset. It's just, if Caleros had maybe played a couple games before this, or even if he would have played last week against Winnipeg, and that, I do expect him to be rusty. That's just what it is. I don't think he's going to come out guns a-blazing. If he does, and I'm wrong, awesome. I'll take it. I'll be more than happy to come on here and go, I was an idiot for taking BC last week. I just think that the way the Lions are rolling and the way the Ticats have been kind of up and down, I just think BC gets this win. I don't think it'll be a blowout, but I think it'll be one of those games where it's probably close, and then BC kind of pulls away at the end, maybe to win by 10, 13, 14 points, somewhere in there. For maybe the first time ever, and probably the only time ever, I am going to pick against the Hamilton Tiger Cats, and I'm taking the BC Lions.
fair enough. You know, it was a tough one for me too, but hopefully you're wrong and I'm right.
You know what? For my pick'em, I disagree. For my fandom, I hope you're right, but we'll have to wait and see. So question time, Mr. Michael. We got a couple this week. First comes from Adam on the 3Down Nation comment section, and he asks simply, what is wrong with Emmanuel Davis?
Listen, the guy came off a great season last year. It's hard to live up to those expectations coming into this season. I don't really see him playing terribly. You know, I haven't heard his name a bunch, so he's not getting beat, you know, week after week after week. Maybe he's not playing up to the standards that he was last year, but it's hard to live up to those because he had so many interceptions, you know, a couple pick sixes. The guy was on fire last year, so I'm not sure if he's doing a terrible job or a great job. It's hard to tell because I'm not watching him on every play. So I don't think that I don't think there's anything wrong with him. I just think he's out there doing his thing, and maybe he's not making as much noise as he was last year.
See, I thought this to myself. This question came to my head against Winnipeg when, what's his name? Mayo, I think. Thomas Mayo, I believe, is the receiver for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. When he caught that TD and Davis was the one on coverage in him, and he just didn't, like, I don't know if he didn't play the ball correctly or if he was out of position, but he wasn't there. He was just, it was like easy pitch and catch from Nichols to Mayo. And I have noticed a little bit that I don't know if he seems tentative or what it is. He just doesn't seem like he was the player last year, but you make a good point. Like, it was going to be hard for him to repeat the success he had last season. 5 interceptions, 3 of them went for touchdowns. He had 2 in one game, and that kind of catapulted him throughout the rest of the year. So, yeah, maybe it's just higher expectations. We're expecting more out of him than we should, because how many times does a defensive back or a defensive player, period, score 3 touchdowns in one season? And Hamilton's defense, especially in the first half of the year, was scoring touchdowns at will on defense, almost scoring as much as the offense, pretty much. But yeah, he doesn't look like he's found his groove, and maybe that's also a product of the secondary not being as well tuned as we would have hoped at this point of the year. But yeah, Davis is going to be a guy that I'm going to keep my eye on, especially when I go to games. Like, it's been a while since I've actually been at a game because I've been on the road for so long. But he'll be a guy that I'm going to pay attention to. And maybe after the Saskatchewan game and maybe around Labor Day, I'll be able to come back and talk about maybe Davis is playing a little bit better. Maybe he's asked to do something different. I don't know. It's hard, very hard to see what DBs are doing when you're watching on television. But when you're live in person, it's a lot easier to kind of judge their game.
Yeah, for sure. You can focus in on who you want to focus in on. So yeah, if you're in the stands, it's a lot easier to tell.
So Adam also gives us our second question of the week, and this is a good one. I really like this one. So at the 1/3 mark of the season, who are your Ticats and league award winners? Simple question, but it should be a little bit of fun. Let's start with most outstanding special teams player. Who do you got there, Mike?
For the league or for the Ticats?
Let's start with the league, and then you can go with the Ticats, or if it's the same person, you just say the both.
It's a tough one. You know, I'm gonna go with, I had a couple guys here. Yeah, I've been really impressed with Mahar. He's been doing a great job in the kicking department. I'm gonna go with Boris Beattie.
Yes, he's definitely been special teams player of the year if you're playing against the Montreal Alouettes.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I'm gonna go the homer pick. I'm gonna pick Brandon Banks. I think he just does so much for the team on special teams. Maybe not, he hasn't had his best year so far, but I think he still has like at least one return where he's getting backfield position, and he has a couple touchdowns this year. So at this point, I'm going to go Brandon Banks for both Hamilton and the league.
Yeah, I took Brandon Banks for the Ticats, and I took him as the league as well. He has 2 return touchdowns. I believe he leads in kick return yards. He is 5th in punt return yards. He has the most missed field goal return yards, and I'm pretty certain he leads in like combined yard, like total yardage. But I do want to give a shout out to 2 players who I thought have put together fantastic special teams plays so far this season, and that's Chris Rainey in BC and Liram Hirilahu in Toronto. I would not be surprised if either of those guys at the end of the season were hoisting that trophy, because expectations on Banks are pretty high. So even if he repeats what he did last year, it'll be pretty tough for him to repeat as most outstanding special teams player. But so far this season, he's been the best kick returner in the league. But yeah, Rainey and Hirilahu deserve some credit for what they've done. I've really liked what they've brought to the table.
Yeah, it's tough to say who's the best returner right now, because Rainey's just on fire, and he's I'm not sure who's faster, him or Banks. I might have to go with Rainey. I mean, this guy is just, seems like he has rockets on his shoes. He's going so fast up there. So, yeah. And Hirilahu has had a great comeback year, bounce back year. He was terrible last year, and he's been pretty dominant this year. So, yeah, big shout out to those 2 guys as well.
So, maybe one of the hardest awards, I don't even think we picked this award at the beginning of the year when we did our predictions, one of the hardest ones to do is most outstanding rookie, because the league's rookie rules are so Byzantine that you think a guy might be a first-year CFL player, but he doesn't count as a rookie. Good example of that is Larry Dean, starting middle linebacker for the Ticats, is a CFL rookie, but doesn't count because he had some NFL experience. So who is your league and Ticats rookie of the year up to this point?
Well, for the league, I'm not sure if this guy is actually considered a rookie or not, but I'm going to pick Tommy Campbell, defensive back for the Calgary Stampeders. I think, you know, he's two interceptions on the year so far. I think he's been a great cover guy for the Stampeders. So, yeah, I'm going to go with him as rookie of the year for the league. And I got to go with Lee for the Ticats. I think he's done a pretty good job coming in as a rookie in that defensive backfield and doing his thing. So, yeah, I got Tommy Campbell and Lee for Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, my Ticats pick is also Travis Lee. In looking this up, there were a ton of players that were first-year CFL players but not rookies, like I said before. And Hamilton does not. They are a veteran-laden team. There were not a lot of rookies on this team. Larry Dean, Travis Lee, Quentin Pointer, and Pointer and Dean both have NFL experience, so they were disqualified. Lee's really the only choice outside of maybe Brandon Revenberg, but I don't think he's done enough. He hasn't started any games, but he has played quite a bit to get the nod. So I picked Lee there. And for rookie, this was a toss-up to me between a couple guys out west, Ricky Collins Jr. in Saskatchewan and Kevin Fogg in Winnipeg. Both guys, I can't pick between the two of them yet. I'm gonna name both of them because I want to give as many guys props as I possibly can. So both Collins and Fogg have put together some really good seasons. Fogg I've been impressed with as a rookie who's starting in the secondary. I think he's grown every week and gotten better. Now he's handling punt return duties, and he looked really good against the Ticats. And Collins Jr. is a good player, and he's been making some plays out in Saskatchewan. So I think either of those guys are good picks for the league-wide award. But I'm gonna give him a tie. I'm gonna cop out and say they're my co-rookies of the year.
That seems fair.
All right, so most outstanding linemen. This is easily the toughest award to ever pick because you don't really watch offensive line play all that much. So I couldn't really come up with a league player, so I just picked Ryan Bomben from the Ticats. I think he's put together a pretty good year. I think out of all the linemen on Hamilton, I think he's the best one they have. So I picked Bomben, and yeah, I don't really have anyone else league-wide because offensive line play is not something you're really paying that much attention to.
Yeah, that's it. That's a tough one. I would go with Filer if he wasn't injured. I think that he's had a really good year up until the injuries. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Filer even though he's out. I think that this guy's a top of the heap center. I think he's one of the best in the league. So, yeah, I'll go with him.
All right, that sounds good. That sounds good. Let's move on to most outstanding Canadian. Who do you got here, both for the Ticats and for the league?
I got Fantuz for the Ticats. I think he's had a great year. He's been healthy the whole time. He's producing each game. And then I got Jamal Westerman for the league, top Canadian.
Huh. So I went Fantuz for both. I think Andy Fantuz has put together a stellar first six games of the season. He has 36 catches for 403 yards and 4 touchdowns. And I know this is supposed to be just what they've done the first six games, but he is on pace for 108 catches for 1,209 yards and 12 TDs. That would eclipse his record, his personal record for most catches in the season, which was 87 in 2010. It'd be the second most receiving yards that he has accumulated in his career, which again, 2010, he led the league with 1,380 yards, and it would break his record for single season TD catches, which was 8 in 2012. So he is on pace for pretty much a career year. He stayed healthy. There hasn't even been a whiff of an injury problem. And I think if he keeps this pace up, I think with the narrative of him being an older player who suffered through injuries, Andy Fantuz is my most outstanding Canadian. There have been a lot of great Canadian players, don't get me wrong. And you're right, Jamal Westerman has been awesome. But I'm gonna go with Fantuz. I've just been really, really happy. Call me a homer if you want. I've been really, really happy with his play this year, coming off, what has it been now, 4 or 5 years where he's missed games? Like, this is a pretty incredible run that he's been on to start the season.
Yeah, he's been amazing. He's been one of the best receivers on the Ticats and one of the best receivers in the league. So, yeah, I don't know. You know, I'm not going to argue with that. I think that if he keeps producing, he could be the top Canadian at the end of the season.
All right, so the semi-main event, most outstanding defensive player. Mike, who are your picks here?
That's a tough one. I'm going to go with, I think, even though he's hated, even though We don't like him. I'm going to go with Bear Woods as the comeback player. I think he's all over the field all the time. He's second in the league in tackles. He's a loud person on the field. He makes himself known. And I just think he's been playing great this year. Even though, you know, Caveman Woods, I'm not a big fan of him. I think that he's had a really good bounce back year so far.
So who's your Ticats Defensive Player of the Year? Is it just Simone? Should we just assume it's Simone?
Yeah, I got to go with Simone. Yeah, you know, he's a leader on the defense. He had a great, great start to the season. He's cooled off a bit, but I still think he's the best defensive player on the Ticats right now.
Interesting you went with Bear Woods. So I obviously went with Hove Simone as my Ticats Defensive Player of the Year. 34 tackles, an interception, a touchdown, a forced fumble. Most of those did come in the first game of the season, but he's still been a solid player all year. But my pick for the league award, Ian Wild, the linebacker out of Winnipeg, leads the league in tackles with 48. He's got a sack, he's got an interception, he's got a forced fumble. He has been spectacular this year, and he's been especially good for the Bombers over the last couple of weeks where they've kind of righted the ship and turned things around. And so I think Ian Wild is definitely my pick at the one-third mark of the season as a defense player of the year.
A bit surprising to see him, one of the best players in the league. It's a bit surprising. I didn't see Ian Wild being one of the best defensive players in the CFL. So good on him for having a great start to the season.
All right, Mike, main course, most outstanding player. Who do you have for the Ticats? Let's do the Ticats first, then we'll do the league guy. I had a really hard time picking the Ticats one for this. Who did you end up selecting?
I got Chad Owens. I think that this guy has been great since he started. You know, his very first game, he made an impact. I think that he's been solid throughout all the games. I think he's made a difference through all the games. So I'm going to go with Chad Owens for my pick for the Ticats.
Yeah, see, solid is what I went with too, and I went with Luke Tasker. There hasn't really been one standout player for the Ticats so far this year. They're a 500 team, so they've had their ups and downs, obviously. And there hasn't really been anyone who week in, week out has put up those ridiculous numbers. But Luke Tasker has been about as solid as you can be for a player. Unfortunately, it looks like he might miss this week's game. He was in sweats and working on the exercise bike at practice on Tuesday. So that's kind of unfortunate. Seems like he might miss the game against BC, which would suck because that Caleros-Tasker connection would be something that I'd like to see ignite again. But yeah, he hasn't found the end zone at all, but he's made all the catches. I'm pretty certain he leads the league in like catch percentage, like times targeted and times caught the ball. Like he's just catching everything that comes anywhere near him. So yeah, it was tough to pick a guy, but I went with the guy that I actually picked as the team's MOP last year, Luke Tasker.
Yeah, that's a good pick for the league MVP. I was debating between two guys, Mike Riley from the Eskimos, obviously, and Chris Williams. Riley leads the league in passing yards. He's second in the league in passing touchdowns. He's on an incredible pace. I think he was on pace to beat Doug Flutie's record for passing yards, which is like 6,600. Something set back way back in 1990. And Chris Williams was on the crazy pace at the start of the season. He's cooled off a bit, but he still leads the league in receiving yards and receiving touchdowns. But I'm going to go with the quarterback. I'm going to pick Mike Riley. This guy's been very impressive over the first quarter of the season, over 2,000 yards passing and 11 touchdowns. So my pick is Mike Riley.
So the way I look at MOP is because it's most outstanding player, not most valuable player. You see the MVP votings in most sports, and it goes to the guy whose team has the most wins or like whose team is performing well. Mm-hmm. I don't look at the MOP. I look at the guy who, independent, I don't care what your team's record is. If you are playing fantastic football, you are playing fantastic football. And all due credit to Chris Williams for his amazing start to the season, although he has definitely cooled off the last 4 weeks. I went also with Mike Riley. His numbers, 2,181 yards, 11 touchdowns, and just 4 interceptions. Mm-hmm. And I don't care that Edmonton is 2-4. Those are incredible numbers. You mentioned the pace he's on. He's on pace for 6,543 yards, and that's after a poor performance against Ottawa this past week. He's on pace for 33 touchdowns, which would have tied him for the league lead last year, and only 12 interceptions. Mike Riley has been playing fantastic football, completely independent of how the Eskimos have played themselves. So while Chris Williams has been great, and he's clearly the best receiver, I think, in the league, although you could make a case for Darrell Walker or even a Darius Bowman, I got to give it to Mike Riley. He's been lights out in five of the six games. He's gone like over 360 yards. Like, that's incredible. So yeah, Mike Riley's my MOP at the 1/3 mark.
Yeah, he's really, really impressed me this year. After last year, you know, he came on strong at the end of the season in the playoffs and obviously won the Grey Cup. The most important thing is to win the Grey Cup. And that's, he had a pretty good Grey Cup game. But this year he's just been, playing above what he has been in the past. He's just on fire. He seems to have more zip on his ball. He's maybe it's probably due to Jason Moss being there helping him out too. So, yeah, I got to go with Riley as well. He's just on an incredible pace. And even though they're 2-4, it's not his fault. Obviously, the offense has been amazing this year. The defense is the problem. So, yeah, I got to go with Riley.
So those are our picks. Send your picks in, either via Twitter or in the comments section of 3Down Nation. I'd love to see what other people think of who the most outstanding players in their individual categories should be at, as we sit here with every team having played at least six games. So that's it for this week's show, Mike. Don't forget, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or listen to it and download it at 3downnation.com. If you want to have your questions answered by either Mike or myself, you can always hit us up on Twitter anytime. Mike, let them know where they can find you.
Mike_Argos.
Whoa, what?
Mike_Ticat, sorry.
And you can find me at JoshSmith_82. And, of course, be like Adam. Post those questions in the 3Down Nation comment section, and we will get to those. So that is episode 51 of Podski Wee Wee. I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.